looking at Romy and he's going, what is that? Well, it's a very well-known jazz composition by a guy named Herbie Hancock, and it's called, ready for this, Watermelon Man. Just for Charlie.
I don't know. Charlie, I'm not feeling it. This doesn't look like you.
I threw out the whole day in my pickup.
Yeah, you're going to get it now that I've labeled you.
Yeah.
Now, on the fact you had sent me, interestingly enough, watermelons, they tie back to the first harvest around the Egyptians.
Yes. Yes, and we can't claim being first on it, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised with as much Native American history as we have here in Arizona that way back when our Native American tribes were probably growing watermelon too, because they did a lot of summer crops. They had the corn and some of the other, and, you know, the Hohokam even grew cotton. So maybe we can claim that 5,000 BC timeline too with our watermelon here in Arizona. You never know.
Well, I doubt any of the tribal leaders buried watermelon with
right.
their
passing. But the Egyptians did. Yes, you are correct.
Nourished in the afterlife, the kings would be buried with watermelon to take with them.
At least they'd be hydrated, sort of, kind of.
Now, over that course of time, from 5,000 years of watermelon growing and breeding and grafting and everything, it was interesting enough. You'd said watermelons, it's the seedless one is 13th generation, and that took over 50 years for them to figure that out. So it's of that first 5,000 years, it's only been in the last, 50, 60 years that this development and crossbreeding and the figuring out that it's the 13th becomes a sterile watermelon, and then how –
I think it was because the Egyptians had more fun spitting watermelon seed than the rest of us today in modern world.
You had something to do to kill your time.
Yes.
Now, we had a caller from Tucson wants to know why seedless are not as sweet. Is that just something that, you know, well, you can't have sterile and sweet?
I'd argue that they are just as sweet and sometimes even sweeter. I think it's a different flavor from the seeded for sure. But I guess I'm biased that we grow the sweetest watermelons out there.
How many varieties do you grow on Russo's?
They're just a handful.
Okay.
So we're, you know, again, we have the one variety that we really hammer hard, and then we'll have, you know, four or five others out there that we're
okay.
testing.
And then that personal watermelon.
Yeah.
I like that one.
No, that's an interesting deal. I think, you know, in our window, we're really, it's a summertime melon. You think of the big watermelon, the kids are around eating that. I think the personal melon has its place, especially for some folks that live alone. They don't have to bring this huge 20-pound melon in and try to consume it all before it goes bad. But in our window, I think we're still heavy towards their traditional seedless.
Okay.
I don't see that changing.
And Yuma, by the way, does a great job with the melons, too. So Maricopa County, we're certainly growing quite a few melons. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Russo Farms. But down in Yuma, we've got a lot of our farmers that are doing some of the summer crops and certainly the melons also.
And this point I don't quite follow. So of all the different kind of crossbreeding and pollinating and but – it also says, but watermelons aren't genetically engineered. Isn't crossbreeding genetically engineering?
You know, yes. Now you'll get me on my soapbox. I mean, any type of crossbreeding or refined breeding, I always tell people I'm genetically modified.
Right.
I've got a little Irish. I've got a little English. I've got German, everything. So to me, in a sense, but I guess if you are real correct and you're using exact science language, they're not transgenically modified. And transgenic, and because they've proven they probably don't need to, some crops aren't requiring that. They're not being attacked by a huge virus or bacteria. And so with most of your vegetables, if they're doing good with traditional type of breeding, The only reason we're using the biotech, which is another very important type of breeding and farming, and it's reducing our pesticide use and everything else. So with some of those, I think we have 10 crops now that are transgenically modified. They needed it, so that's why we did it. And all of it's, I always say in agriculture, we need small ag, medium-sized ag, large ag. Rousseau Family Farming or Farming Company is one of our larger, but it's a family-owned farm. And we also need organic, conventional, and biotech, like my dad did when he grew cotton. So that, I hope that kind of explains it, but probably because watermelon didn't need that transgenic type of breeding because they weren't battling some kind of fungus or virus or...
Well, any of the produce that we grow is not GMO. Now, they're GMOs really more, you can see more of your cottons and more of your staples like that. But, it's all debatable. It has its place, I believe. But at the end of the day, you have to service your customer. And if they don't want GMO, then you're not going to grow GMO.
Right. Yeah.
And when we get back, we're heading into bottom of the hour news. We're going to talk about what to look for when you're in the store. Is there a special way to knock on the melon, a special smell, a special touch to know if it's ripe? What's the shelf life of a melon? And if you've got a question, 1-888-767-4348. Text is a great option, 411-923. And we've got a special recipe from Jan Diotry.